KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
On that in 20 minutes.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Once upon a time, the world's financial system was based on credit-backed, national government-issued paper money firmly linked to physical gold. But over the past 60 years, the economy has become borderless, and it's based on derivative financial instruments. So what role did physics have in this change? Is it the physicists who created the financial models for derivative investments who are to blame for the financial meltdown of 2008? These are a couple of the questions addressed by James Owen Weatherall in his new book, The Physics of Wall Street, A Brief History of Predicting the Unpredictable. James Weatherall is an assistant professor of logic and philosophy of science at the University of California, Irvine. Thanks very much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So the challenge for this book came from someone who you were working with at the school who said, you can't apply science to finance. It's just too erratic. You took that as a call to arms?
Well, I did. I mean, I think that there was... I was interested in a little bit before that. I started asking questions, and it was his response to some of these questions that got me going on this. I think that he had something in particular in mind, sociologically speaking, and I wanted to distinguish that a little bit from the question of how the models themselves could be used.
And he's not the only one. I mean, some people say financial markets, they're just too human. There's too much irrationality and nuttiness going on there to apply science to it.
That's absolutely right. One of the things I try to do in the book is to understand the senses in which that's right and the senses in which it's wrong. I think that there's a very important sense in which that's just not the right way of thinking about things.
Well, we're not physicists. We're not mathematicians. Could you, in a way that we can understand, explain, give me an example of how physics can be applied to markets?
Well, let me just say something quite general first. What I think the right way of thinking about mathematical modeling in the context of finance, it isn't in terms of trying to somehow understand humans or try to understand the economy as the way that we would try to understand inclined planes or quarks or something like that. What we're trying to do is much more modest than that. What we're trying to do is use mathematical modeling, use our best predictive tools in order to get some kind of information about markets, information that can otherwise be difficult to obtain. So they're a kind of tool for understanding correlations between different things in markets and understanding small problems that you run across in investing.
Now, there's a sentence that you wrote that kind of caught me, and I had to read it over twice. It still didn't make sense to me. So some features of markets are predictable precisely because they're random.
That's absolutely right. And this is something that I think tends to be poorly understood, that in many cases, random systems are much easier to make predictions about, at least predictions of a certain sort, than systems that aren't random, that have complicated structure in them. I mean, you can think about just a very simple example. Think about something like coin flipping. Now, I can't predict every time I flip a coin whether it's going to be heads or tails. But if I'm flipping a coin a million times, I can make pretty good predictions about the relative frequency of heads versus tails. And that's the sort of thing that we're using mathematical methods for in finance.
So maybe not good for day trading, but over the long run, it might give us some idea of where things might be going?
That's right. Well, that's just one kind of example, of course. I think that there probably are some things that are useful for day trading as well. Although it's not a big theory that anyone's proposing. It's methods that you're using to solve problems that come up along the way.
And my read of the physics of Wall Street is that one must be modest in the claims. They can deal with some small portions of the market, but not everything. This is not a universal field theory of how markets work.
That's exactly right. So, in fact, I think that most problems that many problems, at least, that one runs into in trying to understand markets are amenable to this kind of analysis, but you're not going to do everything all at once. In fact, maybe the principal argument of the book is that mathematical models are effective for understanding markets, but they're only effective insofar as we understand their limitations, understand the ways in which assumptions that go into making these models limit them.
Well, your example early on in the book certainly caught my attention, the example of mathematician Jim Simons, founder of an investment firm called Renaissance Technologies. How does the performance of Renaissance validate the role of physics in finance?
Well, Simons is a fascinating example. He's, I think, unquestionably the most distinguished mathematical physicist to ever move to Wall Street. He's also the most successful physicist on Wall Street. The Medallion Fund, I think by any reasonable standard, is the most successful hedge fund, period. So just to give an example, from 1988 until the end of the 90s, from when the fund started until the end of its first decade, they returned roughly 2,500%. And if you compare that to the next best performing hedge fund, which is George Soros's Quantum Fund, during that period, the returns on that fund were 1,700%, which is excellent, of course, but that's a huge gap. Mm-hmm. And I think that the distinguishing feature of Renaissance Technologies, the company that runs the Medallion Fund, is that they don't hire anyone with Wall Street credentials. They don't hire people with finance or economics PhDs. They hire physicists, mathematicians, and computer scientists. And I think that my hypothesis, at least, is that the way in which they've been successful, the reason they've been so much more successful than anyone else, is that they stay close to their roots and they understand.
And they keep those Wall Street guys out of there because the financial guys muddy the science?
Well, the idea is that a group of people who really know how to build these models, really understand from the ground floor, from getting their hands dirty with them, just what role assumptions play. Just how, for instance, what role assumptions play in, mm-hmm. in the models that they're building, allow them to be cautious in just the right way to use these things maximally effectively.
We're talking with James Owen Weatherall. The book is called The Physics of Wall Street, A Brief History of Predicting the Unpredictable. And he goes through how physics and mathematics has wound its way into the financial industry in the course of this book, and makes the argument that more could be done on this in a positive fashion. But of course, a lot of people, and maybe even some of them listening, are going to go, wait a minute, these are the guys that messed this up in 2008. These are the quants who, with their supposedly really great models, took us straight down the tubes.
Sure. And, there's absolutely a sense in which that's right. And in fact, in 2008, there was a very particular model that you might think failed spectacularly, although the way I would think of it, that it was misused spectacularly. And it was a model for pricing a particular kind of security known as a collateralized debt obligation, one of these toxic mortgage-backed securities. And it rested on an assumption. It rested on an assumption that default rates would be uncorrelated with one another. So the likelihood of you defaulting on your mortgage was unrelated to whether or not I defaulted on mine. And that's a great assumption when housing prices are going up. When they start going down, it's terrible.
But that was the underlying problem, wasn't it? Is that all of these ideas and theories and formulas assumed housing would keep going up? They kind of missed the very basic, obvious thing that no, that doesn't have to go up.
Well, so that's right. So there's a sense in which the assumption that housing prices would keep going up was in the background. You could also think of it directly in terms of this assumption about correlation. Mm-hmm. But it's not as though we didn't know what to do when housing markets stopped going up. It's that this particular model had been built into so much of the financial infrastructure and was being used by so many people who were blind to the role that this particular assumption was playing in their practice, that the failure, obvious to many people, economists were talking in the pages of the New York Times, for instance, as early as 2002, 2003, about the housing bubble and how it was sure to burst. But that never got translated into a change in the practice.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the physics of Wall Street. If you just tuned in, we're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. If it's a toll-free number, 800-289-5869. Or write to us, conversation@kuow.org, if you've got a question for James Owen Weatherall about the physics of Wall Street. One of the things about this that interests me is that if one takes physics and mathematics and applies them properly, you would argue that it can tell us certain things about the market and maybe in some ways be predictive. But if that's the case, wouldn't everyone quickly figure that out and adopt those same methods? And if everyone is using the same methods of prediction, using math and physics, doesn't it kind of eliminate any kind of advantage for any single person?
Well, so there's a sense in which this has already happened. One of the things I talk about in the book is, and the book really is mostly history. One of the things I talk about is how physicists became as entrenched on Wall Street as they are now. And part of that story involved during the 1970s the beginning of major options markets in the U.S. And what was found then was that people who were doing a better job of pricing derivatives, people using ideas from mathematics and physics to price derivatives, did have an edge. But then, as that was noticed, people got, banks started hiring more and more physicists, and everyone started pricing their options in this way. And then you got to a point where if you weren't pricing your options in essentially this way, then you would run into trouble. In fact, there's fascinating sociological and historical work on the ways in which markets changed and prices changed in response to the adoption of these methods. And so it's absolutely right that once everyone starts using the same kinds of models, you do lose the advantage from those particular models.
Did the rout of 2008 and the bad reputation that some of the people who use these methods got, you say undeservedly, kind of push physics and math out of the market? Has there been kind of a revulsion against that because of what happened?
My impression is that there has been a fair amount of criticism in the popular media, but that, frankly, these methods are so central to so much of modern banking practice that it really hasn't changed very much of how banks and hedge funds are using them. In fact, many hedge funds, as Renaissance Technologies, of course, is the great example, but other funds as well that are using these methods successfully, of course, are going to continue using them. They're continuing to make money. Just as an example, the Medallion Fund in 2007 returned 73%, in 2008 returned 80%. So it's not as though something broke down for them during the crisis.
One of the objections you address in the book is that of Taleb Nassim, who sat there just a few weeks ago. He wrote the book The Black Swan, and if I can summarize his argument correctly, he was saying that because the terrible things that can happen are extremely rare, like black swans, and because they are so terrible, like 2008, these kind of mathematical physics-based systems just are not useful because they can't take into account the enormous downside. You address that objection directly in this book.
I do. And to be completely honest, I'm not sure how much Taleb and I disagree about. In many ways, it's a difference of emphasis. But there are models that do not take into account downside risk. They don't take into account upside risk very effectively either. But over the last 50 years, we've developed tools for thinking about that kind of what's known as tail risk, the kinds of extreme events that under some circumstances can dominate something like a financial market or a political system, but which fall outside the scope of everyday thinking. And in fact, one of Taleb's intellectual idols has been Benoit Mandelbrot, who's a mathematician and physicist who invented fractal geometry. Is the subject of a chapter of the book, and I think that many of the ideas he introduced are revolutionary, and some of them have been adopted, not all of them. But there's just the rub. I mean, so Mandelbrot introduced these ideas that allow us to think about events like black swans in a new way. And that's not essentially different from what people were doing before, bringing ideas from mathematics and physics to bear in order to better understand extreme events and crises.
James Owen Weatherall, you have your critics, notably Aaron Brown, author and risk manager at AQR Capital Management. He wrote a four-part series criticizing the physics of Wall Street. He called your book among the most arrogant books of all time.
I think he said it was the most arrogant.
The most arrogant book of all time. Well, and we'll just take one of the things that he said. He said you argue that physicists were the kind of the prime movers in this changeover in finance to derivatives. He says that can't be true because they came along so late in the process of this changeover over the 60 years.
Well, sure. So I think that there are a few things to say. One is that, of course, derivatives, and this is one of the things I talk about early in the book, is derivatives have been around for much longer than 60 years. There are these clay tablets going back to ancient Babylon describing futures contracts between grain farmers. And so, of course, it's not just physicists. I mean, derivatives have played an essential role, and you know, they played a role in markets in the Middle Ages. And it's absolutely the case that much derivatives trading in the U.S. happened before the real start of derivatives trading in the U.S. happened before physicists were hired by banks in large numbers. But nonetheless, the ideas and I think the intellectual heritage that led to the kinds of pricing models that allowed banks to produce and trade derivatives in large numbers have their intellectual roots in ideas from physics in particular. Mm-hmm.
Lest one think this is just about the market and things far away, you also recount how Pascal used perhaps mathematical reasoning to take a look at the question of does God exist and actually came to a mathematical conclusion about it. Could you take us through those steps?
That's right. This is the famous Pascal's wager. So Pascal argued that, of course, we should believe in God because of the downside risk, if you like, of not believing in God. He thought of it as a kind of bet. So if you made the bet that God existed and you were right, then you would have
big win.
Yeah, big win. You're in heaven forever. And if you're wrong, well, I mean, what was the cost while you were here? Maybe you had to go to church a few extra times. Meanwhile, if you bet against God and you lose, well, it's eternal damnation, and surely you don't want that. And of course, the other side of that bet isn't so bad either. So,
this and other uses of math and physics contained in the book, The Physics of Wall Street, James Owen Wetherall's book. It's subtitled A Brief History of Predicting the Unpredictable. Thank you so much for coming by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
David Hyde produces our program with Arwin Nix. We get production help from Cameron Drews. Bernard Ouellette is our engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.
James Wetherall will be speaking at Town Hall Seattle tonight at 7:30. We've got a link to more information on our Twitter feed. It's twitter.com/KUOWconvo. That's KUOWconvo. Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.